Welcome to the People of Relic and EKR podcast, where you're going to hear the stories of the people that work at these two amazing advertising agencies. Relic focuses on tourism, and EKR works with a variety of businesses to help people get the right message to the right people at the right time. And we have amazing people in our organization, and I am going to interview them to hear the unique stories and backgrounds that they have to help you better get to know the people of Relic and EKR. Camden Bernatz, thanks for joining me on the People of Relic and EKR podcast. How you doing?
Doing well. Happy to finally be here.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty amazed that you've been able to avoid this for this long, but we finally pinned you down to be a guest on the show.
Yeah, I probably should have volunteered sooner. I just figured my turn would come eventually.
Well, it's here and we're excited to talk to you. I think for starters, just tell everybody, I guess we already said who you are, but tell us what your role is here.
I am a creative director and brand strategist, kind of dual roles. So I help put together brand strategy. Well, yeah, strategy for clients, and then also do some executing on the creative side, mainly with copywriting and campaign ideation and stuff. So that's what I do.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Let's back up a little bit. Want to hear just kind of the story of the childhood and upbringing of Camden.
Okay. Yeah. So I grew up in Idaho as the oldest of seven kids, big family. I'm the oldest, and then there's five girls after me and my one little brother, who I was 16 when he was born. So I haven't been around very much at home anyways, as he's been growing up. So I feel almost like he's my brother, but like I always confuse him with my son. I always mix up their names because he's always been like little Dawson. His name is Dawson. So anyways, but yeah, grew up in Idaho.
Let me stop you real quick and ask you a question there. I mean, for one, I've heard a lot of people say once you get past four or five kids, the older kids end up doing more to raise the younger kids than the parents do at that point. Is that true or is that kind of a falsehood?
I don't know if it's do more, but definitely do some. Yeah, like you got to have kids to watch your other kids, right? So plenty of babysitting and, you know, taking the kids to younger kids to, you know, practices and recitals and whatnot and picking up groceries and things like that. So yeah, definitely plenty of that. Lots of free babysitting that my parents got from the older kids.
Nice. And what was it like having, let's see, five younger sisters? Because I mean, it's one thing to be the oldest. It's the other thing to be the oldest and then have five younger sisters below you. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I didn't mind it too much. Like they're great. We get along all right. But I always, you know, I wanted a brother and I kind of given up hope by the time I got my brother. So it was a pleasant surprise. But I was like, well, we can't. I mean, we're so different in age. It's, I didn't grow up with a brother really. So yeah, always getting outvoted, always watching the Barbie movie over the movie I wanted and whatnot. But it's all good. It's
nice. Okay, so I interrupted your story. I'll let you resume.
Oh, yeah. Just saying, I grew up in Idaho and then I came down to Utah to go to school, BYU in Provo. And then I had no specific plans to go back to Idaho or to go anywhere else. I just kind of figured I'd go wherever job and relationships and whatever else took me wherever I needed to be. And so ended up getting a job here. And then before working here at Relic EKR, and then of course being here, I've just stayed, got married. My wife's family's all from Utah. And so it's been about, I don't know, what is it, like eight or 9 years now that I've been in Utah. So I guess I'm a Utahn and not an Idaho person anymore, but yeah.
Nice. So there's a lot of misconceptions, I think, about where you live or where you're from, because when people think of Idaho, at least in Utah, a lot of the people that come from Idaho are in Southeast Idaho, right? And Idaho Falls and Rexburg and all that area. That's like three states away from the Idaho that you grew up in. Is that fair to say?
Yes. I got to defend and say I'm from the pretty part of Idaho, which is, yeah, I'm from up. Lewiston is the name of the town up in the Panhandle. It's about like 2.5-3 hours like south of the Canadian border. Maybe it's more closer to three than 2.5. But so, yeah, pretty far up there. No potato fields where I'm from. It's mountain streams, a lot more what I consider, you know, pretty part of Idaho. But I've been, you know, I have family, spent plenty of time in the other parts. I was born in Rexburg, but only lived there for a little bit as a baby. So yeah, not the same Idaho. I I like it where I'm from a little bit better than the other parts.
Regionally, it's a little closer to like Coeur d'Alene. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah. Like Coeur d'Alene was like in our high school, like sports league and stuff. And yeah, that's where I'm from.
All right. Nice. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure we cleared that up. I knew you didn't want anybody thinking you were from Idaho Falls.
Yeah. I don't know if Sasha has been on the podcast, but I'm not from Blackfoot. She's in the unfortunate part of Idaho when I'm from the better part.
The unfortunate part of Idaho. That'll have to be the pull quote from this conversation is Camden is not from the unfortunate part of Idaho. Well, so before we get into, you know, what you do here and your experience here at Relic and EKR, I'd actually like to hear, because having five younger sisters, I've got to imagine that it was a strange experience for your wife to try to join the family. Having all, like, it's almost like you have to fit into the friend group at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And she, the age of my wife is closer to my second young, or like the second oldest girl, so the third in the order. And so she already act like she came in and was feeling like she had an older sister with my sister right below me. And then yeah, lots of people to interact with. And I thought my family was fairly normal until I got married and I realized how weird we are. Like the fact that there was no official decision to do this. I don't know where it came from, but for whatever reason, everyone in my family has like a bunch of nicknames, just different things that would stick over the years. Something they had said, something that their name sounded like, something that another sibling had called them one time, whatever, movie quotes. And so I didn't realize how weird that was, but then she's like, so who are you talking about? Who is that? And who is that? And I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so. And like, everyone has multiple names of things that we call them. And apparently that's not, at least in her family, that is not normal.
Well, what is the complete list of nicknames that you've been called throughout your life?
Oh, I can't even list them all. My number one nickname is Tank, and that came from my grandpa. I guess when I was little, I was just a fat baby, like you built like a tank, I guess. And then also when I was learning to crawl, apparently I didn't like crawl around stuff. I would just crawl over everything in my way, like an army tank, just to one direction. And so my grandpa said, he's like a little tank. And that one stuck. But what's funny is like, I get called that a lot more when I visit that side of the family. Like my mom at home doesn't really call me Tank. But then as soon as I go to like the family reunion and my grandpa's around or my aunts and uncles, all of a sudden I become Tank again. And so it goes on and off, but that's the most consistent one.
So, I mean, just to be clear for the people that are going to be working with you, is that an appropriate name to be calling you on a day-to-day basis?
I guess if they want to. I won't be offended by it, that's what you mean, but okay. It would definitely be unexpected. No one besides close family has ever called me that, so.
that's how we'll find out who actually listened to this episode or not, is if you that's start true. Getting called Tank.
That's a good little Easter egg.
Yeah. Well, I know because you've worked with me for such a long time, I feel like I probably know more about you than a lot of people do. And I've actually played sports with you over the years, too. Both of us have a passion for basketball. You know, I want to know, growing up, what was something, maybe a formative experience that you had that you feel like had a big impact on who you are today?
Yeah. So along that same lines, yeah, of sports, that is, I did sports all growing up and mainly focused around basketball, of course, and then football when I got a little older, and then also track. And I think the formative experience, I mean, little things throughout all those experiences were formative, but doing track in high school was probably one of the things that helped shape me, because track, I didn't really like it that much, to be honest. It wasn't like I liked running for a fast break in basketball or a touchdown in football. Running just to run was not like, I wasn't personally motivated to do that, but I knew it was good for my other sports. It was good for my, you know, conditioning and stuff. And I was fairly good at it. I had I was pretty fast. Maybe you wouldn't know it looking at me these days, but I was a sprinter. And so I did it at first just like, well, this will be good to keep me in shape while I'm in between the other sports and let's see how good I do. But then I started having some success at it, but I didn't personally like it as much as the other sports. And it was track to me became like this character building thing, because I kind of would dread it every year. I get like, oh no, spring would come around and I'm like, oh, it's time to start running like interval training and time trials and feeling like nervous before my track meets and stuff like that. And every year I'd be like, I'm not doing it this year. I don't care about track. I'm just going to focus on football and basketball. But because I had a natural talent and I knew it was good for me, it became kind of like this. I didn't want to take the easy route and not do it. And it wasn't like my parents or anybody was like forcing me to. They would have been okay if I didn't, but I would have felt like I was just avoiding something hard that I knew was good for me. And so that's not to say that everyone needs to do track and field necessarily, but like that was something that it was funny because my last track meet, my senior year, I knew I was going to be done with it. I sat there in the bleachers and I had this simultaneous feeling of like relief, like I am done, no more of this crap anymore. I don't have to run just to run anymore. But then also I realized like I kind of felt like a emptiness. I'm like, oh, like that. I kind of think about like, you know, in the movies, like when the superhero is battling the villain the whole time. If you beat the villain, then it's like, well, what's my purpose? What am I fighting against? And track was kind of my favorite villain where I didn't like it. I dreaded it every year, but I felt good doing it and knowing that I worked at it and knowing that I did a hard thing. And so that can take on different forms and has taken on different forms since high school. But doing track and field, I think, was formative in that sense, learning that there's value and benefit in doing hard things, I guess.
Yeah. How do you feel like that experience, I guess, manifests itself today?
One is just buying into like long-term growth, like track and building your body in that way and working on, you know, shaving off tenths of a second here and there. It's not something that happens right away, and you have to work at it and measure results in the whole and not just, you know, one day to the next. So being patient in progress, I think I learned that a lot doing track. And then just, I guess, like I was saying, just having something that challenges you, I feel like I need to have that. If I feel like everything is just easy and smooth, that's kind of nice sometimes. And it's good to have that for short periods of time. But I feel like I need something to test me and to make me grow, like that did in high school. And so I don't know exactly if it's not necessarily a conscious thought I have every day, like what's my test today? But like overall, I seek things that help me stretch and grow, even if they're, yeah, uncomfortable. And so not that I'm a pro at that, not that I never complain or I always win the day in that sense, but that's something that I think has stayed with me.
Yeah. Well, I remember the first time you introduced yourself to our company when you first came on board, and this was several years ago. You said that your goals for your entire life had revolved around playing in the NBA. And that by the time, you know, you actually realized that you weren't going to make it to the NBA, you felt kind of lost and had to kind of figure out what your next passion was going to be. I'm curious when that was. When did you realize that Tank the Sprinter was not going to be an NBA star?
Probably later than I should have realized. Like, I remember being a little kid, like before I had ever gone on an airplane, I was kind of afraid of the concept of flying. It just seemed scary to me. And I remember having like a real fear. I was like, well, when I'm in the NBA, like I'm going to have to fly a lot. Like, how am I going to get over that? Like that was, I was really planning and preparing for that future and didn't end up needing to worry about that. But I don't know, like and I don't want to act like I'm not going to hear like toot my own horn, but I was pretty good as a kid. Like I was usually one of the better players on my team, and like other parents would come up to my parents and say, hey, that kid can actually ball. Like I thought I was on track for a while, but stopped growing sooner than I thought. Didn't jump as high as I could, you know, thought and whatnot. And anyways, and so I don't know, I guess when I realized like that was, I should start thinking of other options. I was probably like eighth, ninth grade or something. And I didn't totally give up hope at that point. It wasn't like, forget that, I'm not going to try. I was still trying all the way through. But it wasn't so much that I realized that was not going to be my path, so I had to just default. But I also discovered other interests. Like I really got interested in understanding how people think and what makes people tick. And so I ended up going to school for psychology. I thought I wanted to get into counseling and therapy at first, but then as I was going through school and studying psychology, I also got really interested in like just the applied everyday psychology, which is, in other words, marketing basically is one extension of that, and advertising and what makes someone react to a certain message or advertisement in a certain way, what makes an ad good or bad, what makes people buy or not buy or be loyal to a certain brand and things like that. So by the time I was done with school, I decided to not go on to grad school and not do the therapy, psychiatry route, but instead get into marketing. And so I've been interested in that even since I was little. I didn't know how to what to call it or put my finger on. I want to, you know, get into advertising. I didn't know that until I was in college. But the things that I'm doing now definitely interested me back then. So fortunately, it wasn't just I got to figure something else because the MBA didn't pan out. I had other interests as well that I just decided that was probably more of a realistic route for me.
Nice. Well, I remember the first time we met. Well, actually, I don't clearly remember the first time we met. I know you do because that's how we ended up connecting, is you sent me a message after the first time we met. And I remember we did not have SEO at the time as an in-house service. We used a vendor that we outsourced everything to. But I remember your argument was so compelling when you reached out that it made me actually decide, okay, we're going to stop outsourcing SEO and we're going to bring this guy into the organization and try to build it out as a product. And I just would love to hear kind of the other side of that that perspective, because I obviously know my perception of that experience, but I'm curious of like what made you reach out and what was that experience like coming on board, and was it what you thought it would be when you sent us that message? I've always been a little curious about that experience.
Yeah, I feel like I just was in the right place at the right time. I mean, not literally like place, but just hitting you with a message at the right time, because I don't even know exactly what. I didn't spend like weeks thinking about it or anything, which maybe is more of a inspiring story. It was kind of just a whim, but I was working with some people who own some multiple brands, and I was like their one and only marketing person, which I enjoyed. I had some flexibility and stuff, but it wasn't by any means like a robust team. We didn't have big budgets to work with. It was kind of just bootstrapped. And so I knew, I'm like, this is good, but there's not a whole lot of room for growth here. And I don't really know how long I can do this for, or how long these companies are even going to be sustainable, because they were kind of startups and whatnot. And so I knew I wanted to get back into agencies where I had interned before. Didn't know exactly where, didn't know exactly how, but during my time working with these guys I was working for, I had basically learned SEO partially or mostly with a lot of just self-learning, a lot of online courses and videos and blogs and whatnot. But also I had kind of a mentor, somebody that they were paying a little bit to do some SEO for them and then teach me on the side. So I was verifying, checking things with him, seeing what he thought, asking questions. So I don't think I was an expert or anything, but I was usable. I was hireable, so to speak, in SEO by that point. And so I thought that's kind of what I know best as far as my differentiator. I still had interested in all kinds of different branding, marketing, advertising, like copywriting and whatnot. But as far as my hard skill set was SEO at that point. And so I thought, well, that's something that everyone pretty much nowadays has a website or probably should. And a lot of people don't really know about it as much, whereas a lot of people can write a blog post. They know how to, you know, speak the English language or whatever language they're writing in. They can write the blog post. A lot of people can take a photo. They can do different things. But most people don't know what SEO is unless they've studied it. So I'm like, well, that's something I can offer and kind of provide some value, I think. And so I looked, kind of just poked around Relic. You guys were across the street from the business I was working in. So I just saw your building pretty often. And I said, well, I don't know much about them other than they do marketing and advertising, and they're an agency. And so I poked around the website and saw like a mention of SEO, like as one of your services, but there wasn't a whole lot of highlights of like clients that you had featured that had been using it. It wasn't really called out with its own page or anything. And I was kind of just guessing, but it didn't seem like a very prominent part of the offering at that point. And so that's when I reached out to you and said, hey, I don't know if I'm misreading this and maybe you have a full team I'm not aware of, or maybe there's a reason you don't want to get into SEO, but it seems like maybe SEO is not a huge offering for you guys right now. I do that, and I think I can help you grow it. There's a lot of opportunity to get that business out there. I'd like to help you do that if you're interested. And I'm just kind of hoping that it'd be something that would strike a chord with you. And having a few talks with you and some other team members, we worked it out. But it was just mainly a desire to get into the agency game again and provide value wherever I could.
Yeah, I remember, I remember the way you structured your argument. It's funny because at the time I didn't know you had studied psychology, but you definitely put together kind of a, you know, value, 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 and then the ask, right? And so you structured that really well, and it made sense for me. It was a very logical argument, but also helped me understand, you know, financially how it could be valuable to bring you on. I'm curious because, you know, you did SEO for a long time. Now you're a creative director and you oversee our brand strategy product. I'm curious what it's been like starting at a very narrow product and expanding that education and view to now a holistic view of marketing for different organizations, and maybe what that experience of growth has been like.
Yeah, I'm really grateful the way I came up, and maybe if I came up a different way, I'd be saying that was the best way for me. Hindsight's 2020, but like I didn't come through the typical route of like majoring in like advertising or communications in college or going through like the ad program or anything. But because of that, I'm grateful that I had some self-taught digital marketing skills, SEO specifically, because I feel like I understand a little bit better than I would otherwise how the different channels fit together. That now I'm trying to think holistically about, you know, campaigns and overall messages and things like that. Well, those messages and those campaigns need to be executed in different ways, on a website, on a digital ad, you know, social media, through a billboard, etc. And so I'm definitely have lots to learn, and I'm not, you know, done learning about those things. But what I have done, I feel like I'm grateful that, especially on the digital side of things, I can kind of speak that language, understand that the concept that I'm pitching creatively, I also know with the, you know, you as the client, how that can be executed across your social media, on your website, how to optimize for traffic and drive people to that, how to set up landing pages, things like that. So I feel like it's helpful having to come up that route, that I can apply the creative ideas or the strategic ideas a little bit better than having to just kick it over to digital and not really knowing what happens with it once they get a hold of it.
Yeah. Why do you like, or, and maybe I'm making an assumption here, so maybe the first question should be, do you like it more? So maybe answer both for me. But the holistic view of a brand and brand strategy versus managing one product, one service offering, I'm curious about kind of the pros and cons of each.
Yeah, I this might sound familiar to you because we've had some private conversations about this. So you've probably heard me say something like this before. But to me, and I don't mean this like in a taking it lightly or anything, but to me, advertising, marketing, branding, it's like a game that I like to play. And again, I take it seriously. It's professional. I know it's important. But to me, it's exciting in the sense that getting an opportunity to meet an objective or to break into a new market or to get someone to see an idea and resonate with it and comment on your YouTube video, whatever it might be, is exciting and motivating. And so to be able to think holistically about those things and approach things from a little bit of a more holistic view or the bigger picture is being able to just play a bigger part in the game or be able to be more involved in the game, so to speak. And there's definitely a need for specification or being able to do certain, you know, if you use the sports analogy, they're, you know, basketball, they're like, there's role players on the team and they get paid lots of money in the NBA to be a role player. There's nothing wrong with that. But I feel like doing what I do now, I get to kind of help hold the clipboard a little bit and help organize a lot more moving parts. And that's, to me, I just get to be more involved in stuff I like to do. And so I still like digital. I still like SEO. I'd be happy to do SEO as well, but I feel a little bit looking over the fence saying, yeah, but I also want to help drive the campaign behind it or the idea behind it, the strategy behind it. So for me, it's being able to play the game to be more involved, I guess.
Yeah. It's funny because when you are running a specific service and you're only doing one component of the marketing plan, you have a little bit of the luxury of most of the decisions have already been made before it got to you, and your job is to execute your specific task really well. However, it's a lot more fun to be in the decision-making part of the conversation, right? The problem is you can't go straight there. And so you have to kind of learn bits and pieces of different tactics and different parts of the agency before you make it to that strategy role. But the stakes are also higher because a mistake in SEO is probably going to result in a small issue for the client. A mistake at the brand strategy level has a lot more negative outcome and more long-term negative outcome if you do it wrong. And so I don't even know that I have a question here. I guess I'm just acknowledging that while it's really cool to be able to be involved at the holistic level, the stakes are higher, but that makes it that much more exciting to be able to be the one holding the clipboard, right?
And I think this is a little bit more specific to an agency. If you were like in-house or something doing marketing, wouldn't apply as much. But for an agency specifically in that relationship with the client, I feel like you talked about like the risk and the reward. Brand strategy and your creative concepts is a little bit more the stickiness, so to speak, between you and a client. Like it's a way to differentiate where, you know, lots of places offer similar services and you can get SEO, you can get, you know, different things, web development, different places. And we like to think we have great people here who are especially good at it. And that's great. You can make that case. But as far as the nature of the service itself, it's very similar agency to agency. But your strategy, your holistic approach, the philosophy with which you approach it, your creative ideas, you're not going to get the exact same one everywhere you go. And so high risk, they might not like it and therefore they go somewhere else because your idea didn't resonate with them or your strategy didn't resonate with them. And that can happen. But if it does, then they're going to want to stay with you a little bit more and work with you because that's something that's unique to you and your team that they're not going to find elsewhere.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, tell me, Camden, some of your favorite projects you've worked on since you've been here.
Oh boy. Let's see. I liked Dirty Dough more recently in their response to the Crumble lawsuit, just because that was just fun to be able to, not that it's ideal to have a lawsuit against your client, not that we should ever seek that, but that's a situation where because we knew who the brand of voice and we knew how we were going to respond as far as the fact that we could respond to it, I guess, it gave a unique opportunity to be clever and have some brand personality in a public way. And so just the fact that people are talking about our billboards and we got featured in, you know, prominent news articles and things like that, that was just fun just to have your work out there and have people talking about it. So I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, not everybody gets to have their work on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, right?
Yeah, that was good. Yep, and buzzing on LinkedIn and things like that. So anytime that's happening, that's fun. I also liked, this one wasn't as prominent and it's still kind of in the works as far as, not in the works as far as a specific project, but like we're trying to help clients like this ongoing. But Beaufort, South Carolina, we worked with them a while back about on a messaging campaign and trying to identify like how do we describe to someone who hasn't been to Beaufort, South Carolina, what it's like to be here? You can't just grab somebody and drop them there, right? So how do you paint that picture? How do you describe it? And so it's kind of a messaging campaign about trying to describe this place, the sense of Beaufort, and trying to capture that with words and images. When just doing that was I like doing that kind of stuff where it's we have a clear objective, but don't know how to get there. And that's where creativity and brand strategy can come in. So we talked about, we had this, I won't get into the details of it again, I guess, but like just this connection to like taking a deep breath, like one of our lines, like if taking a deep breath was a place, or sitting on a porch with a warm blanket was a place, we were describing it in these things people can relate to and a place maybe they haven't been to before. So that was a fun messaging campaign. And then all kinds of just brand building, like any kind of brand building. I'm trying to think who might be the favorite. Man, I don't know.
It's like picking your favorite kid.
Yeah.
And you've got like seven of them. Right?
Yeah. I like it all. we did some fun. I did a video for Just Serve. Just Serve the organization that's about volunteering and they're a platform for finding volunteer opportunities and service. I was able to put together a video concept that was an animated video. And we work with some animation partners to bring that to life. And so video is always fun because it's just fun. You get to see something move on the screen and not just be in your mind or on paper. And so that was a fun project as well.
Well, Camden, and all those projects have turned out really, really cool. We're running a little short on time. And so I want to ask you briefly, what does the future look like for you? And you know, what the way I've been wording this with other people is, let's fast forward 25 years or however many more years you decide your career is going to be. How do you look backwards and say this was successful?
Oh man, I should have more of a specific answer than I do, because that's something I should be working toward, making sure I'm in the right direction. I think in general, I don't know what my exact role or exact title will be or whatever, but as far as the nature of what I'm doing, I know I want to be involved in this kind of stuff where I'm again, I keep using the analogy of like playing the game of advertising and marketing. It's just really fun and business. And so I think success will have looking back, if I think I've been successful, it will be that I kept moving forward in it. I don't want to be one of those people that found my niche and just kind of stayed there and said, I only do this thing, or I only write this kind of ad or service this kind of client. I want to be moving with the new technology, the new trends, the new platform for running ads and things like that. And so eventually at some point, I'm sure I'll be the old guy that gets passed up, and I think I'm with it, but the kids say I'm not. That'll probably happen. But as long as I can just keep being involved in the industry and moving forward and show how I progressed and adapted, then that'll be satisfying to me. And why, I guess, hopefully something that I did also made a difference, I guess, if I helped drive results for clients or my own business or whoever I'm working with. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, Camden, it's been awesome to chat with you. As a parting thought, what's something that maybe your coworkers or clients that might end up working with you, what's something they need to know?
Need to know. I don't know if you need to know anything about me, but just that I really appreciate the connecting with people better than I am at doing it. Probably I'm kind of introverted. I think a lot before I speak, and I'm not as good at like small talk or going out of my way to just like meet people as much as I'd like to, but I really like having just real conversations about real things. Like, I'm not good at small talk, but I'm good at real talk, if that makes sense. So I'm always down for a conversation about anything. Like, I mean, small talk's fine too. I'm not that I'll hate you if you have small talk or anything, but I just really like to get to know people and what makes them tick and talk about those kind of things with them. So I don't know if you need to know that or not, but that's something that you could know about me.
Perfect. Camden, thanks. It's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate the work you've done since you arrived in our organization, from when you were doing SEO to today when you're overseeing the creative team and overseeing our strategy product. It's been really, really incredible to have you on board, and I'm excited to see where you take it.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm excited to see where we can go from here.
Okay. Well, thanks, Camden. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Yep.
This is one of the many stories of the people of Relic and EKR. I hope you'll stick with us and listen to the other stories that we release on a weekly basis and get to know our whole team. We've got some amazing people here, and we hope you enjoy it.